Working out on vacation should count as double.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter as always at redrock_bball. Today we're going to be doing something that I've never attempted on this podcast before, and that is doing a call-in show where you guys can call in, get your voice on the podcast and ask me some questions. So we'll get to that in a minute. Before we do that, some news in the NBA. That has occurred over the past 24 hours or so. The Orlando Magic have decided that they are waiving Shelvin Mack, so they are down to literally one point guard on their roster, and that is DJ Augustin. So I'd expect some sort of trade or free agent move from the Magic to get someone in there to play point guard. The Celtics are also signing Brad Wanamaker, who has been playing in Europe and in Turkey. He's a guy that could be into that Shane Larkin sort of role we saw last season. Yeah, could be replacing Marcus Smart if he leaves. He is a real solid option. And we've seen these veteran EuroLeague players like Daniel Tice for Boston last season come in and be effective. And Wanamaker could be one of those guys for this season. So don't count him out. He is a name to consider and could very well be a part of the rotation very, very early on for this Celtics team, who obviously is looking to make a big splash this season. Woj has also just tweeted that Danny Green will be opting into his player option, so he'll be remaining with the Spurs, a $10 million player option. Rudy Gay for the Spurs has already opted out, but Danny Green will be opting in. And the other news, of course, was that the Denver Nuggets will be declining. I actually try this one first. The Indiana Pacers declined the team option on Lance Stephenson, so he'll be a free agent. Also a shit bloke, not that good of a player. Let's see if he ends up going anywhere. He's also been terrible everywhere he was apart from Indiana, so we'll see what that means. And then the other one is the Denver Nuggets declining the team option on Nikola Jokic.
It's pretty good. It's pretty, 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 pretty good.
Yeah, he is pretty good, and they declined that team option so they can make him a restricted free agent. And the report from Shams is that they'll be offering him a 5-year, $145 million max contract, so they're locking him in. And before we get into the call-in portion of the show, Adam Marius, the host of Locked On Nuggets, has a quick hit on the Nuggets offer of that, or the Nuggets making that 5-year max contract offer to Nikola Jokic.
Hey everyone, this is Adam Mattes of Locked On Nuggets here to give you a quick update on Nikola Jokic's contract extension. Sham Sharania of Yahoo Sports is reporting that the Denver Nuggets are prepared to offer Nikola Jokic a 5-year, $146.5 million max contract extension that would keep him here in Denver until the 2023 season. Denver had the option of picking up the final year of Jokic's rookie scale contract worth roughly $1.5 million. That would have saved Denver in the short term on their salary cap, but it would allow Nikola Jokic to become an unrestricted free agent next summer. Given Denver's lack of luck in free agency, both retaining their own players and grabbing new players on the open market, this was a no-brainer for Denver, being able to solidify Jokic as the cornerstone of their team going forward. He remains underrated by a vast majority of NBA fans and even NBA analysts. He led the Denver Nuggets in points, rebounds, and assists. He shot 40% from behind the three-point line on 3.5 attempts. He's one of the most efficient post-up players in the NBA, as well as one of the best offensive and defensive rebounders, and an elite mid-range jump shooter. And the Nuggets were 10 points per 100 possessions better with him on the court than off, far and away the best mark of all of the players on the Nuggets roster. Denver now has a salary cap issue. Bringing back Will Barton for the mid-level extension alone would leave Denver with a massive tax bill, far higher than you'd expect for a team that has yet to make it into the leap into contention, somewhere around $50 million in luxury tax payments alone. Kenneth Faried, who is set to make $13.7 million next season, Wilson Chandler, $12 million, Darrell Arthur, $7.4 million, are all candidates for Denver to try to unload on a team with salary cap space, because they are all large contracts in the final year of their deal, expiring contracts. For Kenneth Faried is the most likely player to be traded, as he has been cut entirely from the rotation. Denver does have a large collection of players and draft picks to be able to sweeten the pot in any potential deal to get a team to bite on a trade for one of those players, including all of their first-round picks in the upcoming drafts, as well as Juancho Hernangómez, Monte Morris, Malik Beasley, Trey Lyles, and Tyler Lydon, all young prospects with upside that a team might be willing to bite on. Jokic has been the lowest-paid player on the Nuggets roster for each of the last three seasons, minus the two-way contract guys. He's been the league's best value contract since he entered, earning just $1.5 million per year to date. So it'll be interesting to see how he responds to being the highest-paid player on the team. He's already assumed most of the roles of the team's best player and floor leader, but it'll be interesting to see if there's any new dynamics now that he is going to be the highest-paid player in the locker room.
All right, thanks, Adam, for that take there. Of course, he mentioned in there, Wilson Chandler has opted into his $12 million player option, so he'll remain on the Nuggets unless a trade occurs. Another one of those off-season decisions that gets made. All right, that's all the news. So I've got Michael Bolton here pressing the buttons. Michael.
Let's get to it.
All right, let's get into taking your calls. All right, let's go to our first caller now on this call-in show. We've got Monty Castellano here. Monty, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. It's good to have you on, the first caller on the first of these call-in shows. What's your question?
So I had a question for you about wondering, because the Suns pass on Luka, the Sacramento Kings pass on Luka, and then the Hawks ended up trading Luka. So why is Luka your number one?
Okay, numerous things. The landscape of the current NBA, like getting players who can play the wing position, the two, the three, you know, sometimes at the four, it's a premium in the NBA. That's where the good teams are devoting their resources. The fact that his production has never been seen at that age in Europe. You know, the EuroLeague MVP, the EuroLeague Final Four MVP, the Spanish League MVP, titles in both of those leagues as well. Projectable numbers that are things that we haven't seen done before either. Box score plus minus, advanced stats, regular sort of box score numbers as well for a guy of that age. It's unheard of. And that sort of production for a guy who's proven in a league against professionals is the reason there. Now, add to that a guy who's a ball handler on the wing, who's shown ability to get to the rim, who can hit step back shots and can shoot and play off ball, can play on ball. I think that sort of a player is just exceptionally valuable. DeAndre Ayton put up good numbers. We've seen that in college, but there's still questions about the defense. How can a big man be as impactful as a wing player? I don't put too much. You know, I know that, you know, Vlade is obviously a European player, a guy from Eastern Europe, much like Doncic is, but I put very little stock, especially when the comments coming from him just make zero sense, and his track record as a GM, not all that good. I'm not sure how much of an impact Kokoschkov had in Phoenix in that decision. I think that Robert Sarver and his Arizona connections and Ryan McDonough's ability to bend over backwards for either players and fans had more of an impact rather than Kokoschkov's prior experience in coaching Doncic. So basically, they're the reasons, Monty. Do you not agree that he should have been the number one pick?
No, I think that he's definitely in the contention for the number one pick. It was just a differing perspective on him and his value compared to the others, and just the fact that there were so many European connections, especially with the first two, that I was just, and they ended up deciding to go against him. Just kind of thought that was kind of curious.
Yep, no problem. Great question. And I guess we'll find out how all this pans out over the next few years. Thanks, Monty, for calling in.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, let's go to our next caller now. I've got Daniel Williams here. Daniel, what's your question?
Hey, Josh, I just want to say thank you so much for hosting this. I follow Basketball Monster and you on Twitter all the time, listen to your podcast. Really appreciate all that you do.
Appreciate that.
I'm in a dynasty head-to-head points league, no percentages, and just wanted to know what your top 10 rookies would be in that dynasty league, and why are you so high on JJJ, and with a lack of an offensive game as much as some others, would he be valued as high in such a dynasty league?
Good question. Now, what I'm going to be doing over after today's podcast for the next three podcasts is ranking the 60 draft picks and a couple of undrafted guys in terms of their overall dynasty value, in my opinion, at this point. But that's more geared towards head-to-head and rotisserie formats. Now, you're talking about it from a points league, and I've been down on points leagues before, Daniel, but I think that there's real value in points dynasty leagues, because my major criticism of points leagues is the lack of flexibility, the lack of variability in terms of how players view other players. But
sure.
In a dynasty league, that's different. Are you building for now? Are you building for the future? You're projecting out, you know, years in advance. I think that points leagues do have real value in dynasty type settings. So, in saying that, when I'm going to do these rankings, it's going to be for head-to-head based leagues. But a guy like Jaren Jackson Jr., his value is significantly higher in rotisserie head-to-head formats, because his value comes from his ability to, you know, contribute threes, contribute blocks, to give you really solid percentages. And those things don't carry over as much into points-based formats, whereas a guy that like DeAndre Ayton or Marvin Bagley, who are getting 20 points, you know, 10, 11 rebounds, that's way more valuable than a guy that's 16 and 8 with 2.5 blocks, because that's more translatable to head-to-head. So in that type of a setting, I wouldn't be pushing Jaren Jackson up into the top three. I'd have Bagley significantly higher. I'd have Ayton possibly even ahead of Doncic there as the number one guy. You're looking for those bulk scorers, big rebound guys, a guy like Trae Young, who could be able to put up, you know, 8 assists and 18, 19 points at some point in his future, is probably going to be valued ahead of a Jaren Jackson Jr. Pushes guys like JJJ down, pushes guys like Wendell Carter down as well. And you're looking for more of those bulk guys. Players like, say, Lonnie Walker, even a Kevin Knox, I think they have higher value in a points format, as opposed to those other players who get their value, like a Zaire Smith, who get their value from defensive type stats. So it does change things up, and I would be pushing JJJ down. I'd be pushing Bagley up higher and Ayton up higher. So I'd probably have Ayton at one. I'd have Bagley probably. I'd have Doncic still at two. I'd probably have Bagley at three in that sort of scenario. Young at four, or Young and Bagley fairly interchangeable in that top area, and pushing some of those guys like even a Colin Sexton or Kevin Knox. They are significantly higher to me in a points dynasty type format. Any other play you want to ask about there, Daniel?
Yeah, well, this has to do with non-draft, non-rookies, that is. But it would be particularly for Taurean Prince. What is your value on Taurean Prince? And he took a small step forward, but not as big as I thought he would. Is there hope for the future?
He is a guy, obviously, came in as a bit of an older rookie, had played in, you know, 3 or 4 years, and 4 years, I think, in college, struggled for chunks of the season. But towards the end of the year, we saw a different type of Taurean Prince. He had the ball in his hand a lot more. He was banging in threes like they were going crazy. You know, 6-7 assists, 6 or 7 threes, big scoring loads. With Trae Young there, and this is with, you know, he did this last season when Schroeder was hurt, when Bazemore was out. With Trae Young there, he's not going to be handling the ball that much. So those performances we saw from him late March and through April, I don't think they're going to be replicable. I think he's a guy that's not suited to be the number one option, which is what he was in that stretch last season. He'll go back to being the third guy. I still think that he can be a comfortable top 100 player, probably a top 75 guy next year. Get those percentages up again, shot well from three, increase usage a little bit, find some better looks with Young on the court there with him, and even a guy like Kevin Huerter next to him to help space the floor. But I think if you're looking at what he did in the final 10 games of the season, that's probably not replicable. But also the inconsistency, say, through January, when there were games where he was scoring 1 or 2 points, I don't think that'll be too much of a problem in year three. And I think he should be looking at him as a comfortable top 75 guy for at least the next, I'd say, 4 seasons or so. I don't view him as a great foundational wing piece, but he can defend threes, he can defend fours, he can handle, he can up his usage when necessary. I think he's got a shot to have maybe 1 or 2 top 50 seasons, and yeah, 4 or 5 in a top 70 type of range.
With so many people coming into Phoenix, and with Phoenix wanting to grow, how does that affect TJ Warren?
I think Warren's in trouble in terms of overall value. I think we're going to see him start to dip. Mikal Bridges is going to cut into that playing time. I think Warren will still be pretty useful, but instead of being a 32-minute guy, he might be a 27-minute guy over the next couple of seasons. Probably won't be initially this season, but I do think that they'll look for the Bridges-Jackson combination to take some of those minutes off TJ Warren. So I think he's looking at a significant downturn in value. Daniel, thanks for calling in and asking those questions.
Yeah, thank you so much, Josh. That really helps.
All right, let's bring in the next caller. This is Ryan Jones. Ryan, welcome to the show.
How's it going, man? Pleasure to be on. Thanks.
What's your question?
So basically, I wanted to know when you're in a dynasty league, let's say, you know, you just got like a 8 or 9 cat dynasty league, something like that. How do you weigh like risk reward when it comes to, you know, let's say you're punting rebounds or, you know, punting a category basically. And like, how do you weigh like risk reward if your best player available is not like wouldn't fit that category? If you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, look, it's an interesting one. Punting in Dynasty becomes a difficult proposition, especially when you're not in the upper ends of contention, because you know, you just never know what's going to happen. So if you're not one of the top few teams, I'm not necessarily looking at drafting based on my build necessarily. And I've had Dynasty teams in the past that have been pretty good at free throws and the opportunity to get a guy like Clint Capella, and I just grabbed him. And then you see where that goes, and you can build your team around that, or you can use that as another asset. So if I'm looking to draft guys and they might not fit my exact punt build, and I'm not in a situation where I'm going to necessarily be, you know, right up there at the number one, number two spot for next season, I just take them. You can use them as trades. You can use them to then be the new foundation of your team moving forward and get other guys around them, trade other players out to get players to fit into that as they start to become good. But I wouldn't be paying really any attention to a player's significant deficiencies when drafting them in a dynasty type format, unless, again, I was the champion last year, or I was in a top two or top three and I'm looking to push there again. But even then, I'd consider drafting them. And then, hey, where can I trade this? Can I get more assets? Can I get other guys there in to help me? It's not like you're talking about a redraft league where you're trying to get everything to fit in with those first 6 or 7 picks. Most of the time when you're making rookie draft picks, they're not the guys that are coming in and being your 5th best guy or 6th best guy or 8th best guy. They're down the end of your roster, and you might not have to play them all the time. They can just sit there and you can see how it develops and use that as an asset later on. So generally, I'm looking at the guys who overall I think have the best chance to be that top 50, top 40 guy later on, because you've got a guy that's top 40 in 3 years' time. You can trade him away to someone else and get someone else back who's top 40 who then fits your team at that current time. So I'd pay very little attention to punch strategy when drafting in rookie drafts, Ryan.
That makes a lot of sense.
No problem.
Appreciate you having me on.
No worries, man. Thanks a lot.
All right, take care.
All right, time for the next caller, and this one is Michael Banjoko. Michael, welcome to the show.
What's up, man? How you doing, man?
I'm going all right. What's your question?
My question is, well, it doesn't really have to pertain to fantasy, but even though I do play fantasy today, but it just have to pertain to Ben Simmons because he's also from Australia, just like you. I want to know is like, why do you think people think he doesn't deserve Rookie of the Year because he sat out a year or what? What do you think?
There's a couple of things that people have against him. I think that there is that portion of it. There's the fact that he sat out a year, so it's, oh, he's not a rookie sort of stuff, which, mm-hmm. again, it doesn't matter. Like, that's the rules. Like, just accept it. It's right. The rules. You can't make that judgment off your own bat. If the rules were that you had to be the year you were drafted, then he wouldn't be eligible and no one would be having an argument. Exactly. That's as simple as that.
Exactly.
The other thing is, I think there is an issue because he didn't score as many points as Donovan Mitchell. The fact that he didn't shoot threes, people have issues with that. That's not the be-all and end-all of everything. And he also exudes a real level of cockiness as well, and that seems to rub people the wrong way.
It shows confidence. To be honest, for me,
look, he knows that he's good. He knows that he's better than a ton of players, and he's right. Like, I have issues when people mm-hmm. are overconfident and it's nowhere near accurate. But he comes out, mm-hmm. he says it, and he's accurate.
And produces it exactly.
So, look, we're recording this now. The NBA awards are going to be on pretty soon today, and we'll see the result. But I think there's multiple factors associated with it. Again, he's also comes off as a little bit of a, not a negative personality, but a little bit, I don't know if rude's the right word, and comparing that with Donovan Mitchell, who's bright mm-hmm. and bubbly and energetic, and people are attracted to that. So I think there's multiple factors. I'm pretty sure he's going to win the award, though. So
he definitely will.
Yeah, well.
I tweeted out, like, Donovan Mitchell just pulled out to the NBA awards just to finish in second place. I'm like, there's no point in coming, but hey, it is what it is, though. That's what I wanted to ask you, though. Thank you for picking up, though.
No worries at all, Michael. Thanks for calling in.
No problem. Thank you, man. Keep going, bro.
All right, let's bring in the next caller now. He's Black NATO on Twitter. Scott, welcome to the show. Thanks for calling in.
I know earlier in the season we would have a discussion about how Ben Simmons, like I didn't think he should have been even eligible to be Rookie of the Year because he was like a second-year player, and to a certain degree, even though he wasn't on the court, he still got to enjoy the professional development of traveling with the team and things of that nature. And I understand anyone's argument against that, which is fine, but do you think that if we were to have the superlative voting for Rookie of the Year and MVP and things of that nature, if it were to happen after the playoffs, that might be a better way of kind of like assessing, you know, who really deserves those honors? Because I think that Donovan Mitchell and Jason Tatum far exceeded the level of productivity in the postseason than what Ben Simmons contributed.
I think, weirdly enough, the question just before you was regarding Simmons as well, but this is a slightly different tack, so we'll talk about it in a different way. I think that voting on those awards, including playoffs, is unfair to the players who aren't in the playoffs. And majority of the time, the contenders for Rookie of the Year, they're on bad teams and they aren't in the playoffs, so it's not normally going to be too much of an issue. And we are always susceptible to recency bias. And I agree with you. If they had have done the voting at the end of the playoffs, I don't think Simmons would have won. I think they would have given it to Donovan Mitchell because of his performance in the playoffs. But we have to remember that was 10 games worth. And you can extrapolate over what they did over 80 games, and it's a much larger sample size. Now, of course, I understand that the playoffs are a more pressure-packed environment. The games are more important. But do those 10 games where Mitchell did outplay Simmons, and let's be honest, Simmons was pretty good in that series against Miami in those 5 games. He struggled against Boston, so he struggled in half the games, and he struggled, and he played well in the other ones of those games against Miami when Embiid was out, and he was leading that team pretty comfortably in that series against Miami. So I think some of the narrative is that Simmons sucked in the playoffs, and that's just not accurate. He sucked in some of those games against Boston, majority of them, but played well against Miami, and if that vote had happened after the playoffs, I am fairly certain that a lot of media members would have switched their vote. I don't think it's necessarily fair, though. Again, most of these... What if Simmons had have made the playoffs and Mitchell didn't make the playoffs and then Simmons struggled in the round two? Would people have changed their minds because he struggled even though, yeah, say, Donovan Mitchell didn't make it into the playoffs? Is that a fair argument that someone got there and then struggled at times against a higher level of competition? Should we be then downgrading them in the future?
Right. No, I agree with you. That's solid logic. The one thing I feel about Ben Simmons is I don't know if he's going to have the upside until he can get his shot in order, because it seems like a lot of these other teams, especially the ones in his conference, he's going to have to contend with, you know, in the playoffs likely for the next decade or however long he's playing. I think that he's going to have to improve the shooting component of his game, because otherwise, I mean, I think that they're just going to be able to, like, let him roam around and he'll just be out there and, like, they're going to force him to either take bad shots or just, I just don't think he has the upside of some of these more dynamic players and more well-rounded players with shots like Donovan Mitchell and Jason Tatum, who is, like, shooting out of his mind as a, you know, a three-point shooter when he really historically, you know, wasn't a strong facet of his game.
Of course, Simmons is going to have to work on that. He's going to have to develop that. I have confidence that he can develop at least somewhat of a shot, not a good shot, not a, you know, bang knockdown type of three-point shooter, not going to be taking them at huge volume. But I think he is at some point going to be able to take some threes and make some of them. But I think a lot of people are putting so much, and three-pointers are really important, of course, in the NBA with what happens with the way the game is played these days. We have to remember how much of an elite-level defender Ben Simmons was, you know, rebounding, passing, where he was significantly better than both of those other guys, and these are all important parts of the NBA. Yeah, Tatum shot well. Mitchell was great in terms of being a volume scorer, but Simmons outplayed them in, you know, many, many other areas. And yeah, maybe his overall upside is capped if that shot never comes along, but he's still already really bloody good. And that might, you know, stop him from becoming a top 10 sort of a guy, but he's already in this top 20, top 25 discussion as a player. And I think we look at it, oh, he can't shoot, but he just dominates in all these other areas that those other guys, frankly, aren't able to do. And I'm not sure they're ever going to be able to get to that level. And we never talk about, oh, well, is Tatum ever going to be an elite rebounder, steals guy, on-ball defender? He's solid, but will he ever be the playmaker that Simmons is? And we don't put the same level of focus on all those things. But of course, I agree with you that that three-point shot or just being able to hit some element of a jumper does have to come around for Simmons to become a truly dominant overall type of a player. So thank you, Scott, for coming on and asking your question.
All right, have a good one.
Thanks, man. All right, and that'll do it for the call-in podcast. Thanks to those guys who called in and were a part of the show for the first time that I've done that. I'll do some more mailbag shows and maybe another call-in show at some point throughout the off-season, maybe as we head into or after free agency. We'll do something along those lines. A reminder, the rest of the week, I'm going to be looking back at all 60 players drafted and trying to rank them from a dynasty point of view, as I mentioned earlier in this show. And of course, I'm still getting guys for the Dynasty Leagues. We've filled up 4 of those Dynasty Leagues so far. I've got another 2 at the moment that we're filling up. And if you did submit an application, you will be getting an email at some point in the next couple of days with the links to whatever spots are left in those drafts. Oh, those are leagues after the Patreon subscribers have their first go. We will be doing redraft leagues. I won't start recruiting those until probably in August with the drafts of those in September's, September. Head-to-head leagues, roto leagues, points leagues. We'll also be doing some best ball / draft only leagues for the first time this season. So I want to push the amount of leagues that I'm running this year up to over 50, pushing towards 60. So tons of spots for all you guys to be involved. Now, if you do like this podcast, one of the best ways that you can help support it is by leaving a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or Google Play or TuneIn or Stitcher or Spotify, everywhere where you can find this podcast. And of course, on YouTube, give it a thumbs up. Hit that subscribe button. Tell your friends as well. I'm also reactivating the Instagram account. So go over and follow that at redrock_bball, the same as my Twitter. Go and interact on Instagram. Share it with your friends. Smash that red heart over on Instagram with our story that went up. That might have expired by now. And new posts. So check out Instagram, revamping that for this season as well. So go and add me on Instagram. Follow me on Twitter. Subscribe on YouTube. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts. You know all the ways to do that. Get at me. Ask your questions. All that stuff. Be ready for the ranks of these rookies over the coming 3 days. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Jack Cooley.